वैष्णव वृंद की जय। इस्कान पांडुर चार सुर प्रभुपाद की जय। नामचार्य सुर हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम सिख हो श्री कृष्ण चेतन प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि श्री गौर भक्तरिंद की जय। साम वेद भक्तरिंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद ओ ग्लोरीज टू द सिंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द सिंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द लोटस फीट ऑफ श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। नमो ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामने। नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निविशेष शून्यवरे पश्चाच देश धारिणे। ओम ज्ञानम जिमरन दश करंजन शुलकाया चक्षुर मिलितुम जैनम तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। वांशकल्पतृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्येव च पतितनं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। सो दिस आफ्टरनून आई थॉट वी'd लुक एट द सेवंथ चैप्टर ऑफ भगवद गीता। वी'ल लुक एट द फर्स्ट 9 वर्सेस ऑर सो गो थ्रू। डू दैट या आई वांट टू गेट अ बुक। Because this is actually quite an extraordinary, quite an extraordinary chapter. So in the beginning, first verse, Krishna says to Arjuna, he says that you should hear from me, Tat Srinu, just hear this, he says, try to hear this, Tat Srinu. How? Yoga union, by practicing yoga, mayi asakta mana, with your mind absorbed in me or attached to me, mad ashraya, in full consciousness of me, you can know me. And he says, you can know me, two words, asamshaya, without any doubts, and samagraham. Samagram. Samagram means completely. So that's a very big claim. Now I'm going to tell you how you can know me by this practice of yoga completely and without any doubts. Big claim. So then he continues in the next verse. He says, now I shall tell you, I shall let you know, fully, completely, this knowledge, which is both phenomenal and numinous. That is to say, jnana-vijnana, everything that you can know from seeing things in the world, the perceptual world, the phenomenal world that you see around us, and numinous or numinal, the world that's beyond, material and spiritual, you could say. And when you know this, again, asheshataha, without, you shall know this completely. And when you know this, there's nothing more to be known. Everything. The first time I read this, I thought, come on, you know, how are you going to do this? But the amazing thing is that Krishna does it. He tells us this thing here. So then he remarks, the third verse of this, having made this promise, you can know me in full, completely, and without any doubt, I shall tell you everything about everything that there is, completely, so that there's nothing further to be known. We'll know the entire content of what there is. In philosophy, they have this word ontology, from the Greek word ontos, meaning being. So ontology is the science of what is. So this is everything, complete ontology, everything. And then he says that this knowledge, especially about Krishna, is very rare. Out of many thousands among human beings, manushanam sahasreshu, out of a thousand, only a few try for siddhaye, try for perfection. Almost no one is interested. They just want to get through their lives and get it over with. They're not trying for anything high. And those who have achieved perfection, siddha, that means liberated, somehow or other, they become liberated souls. Still, kaschit mam veti tat fataha, only a few know me in truth. So hardly anyone tries for perfection, and of those who actually achieve it, only a few know me. As I really am. So in other words, this is esoteric knowledge. Or maybe as later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls it the secret of all secrets. Very hard to know. So now Krishna begins his instruction in text 4 with his telling what there is in the world. So first he starts with Bina Prakriti Astada, my separated energies, is Prakriti, the separated energies, which are Astada, 8 divisions. One thing is that becomes clear, maybe I should say at the beginning, is when we're talking about Krishna. Now, it will become clear later on, but we should know in the beginning, we're talking about Krishna. We use the term God, but the term God is actually not adequate. It's not sufficient to describe Krishna. Because the word God means any powerful controller is a God. There can be many gods in principle. But when we talk about Krishna, we talk about what Prabhupada calls the absolute truth. Bhagavatam, he says, is about the absolute truth. Absolute truth means the ultimate source of all energies. Defined in Vedanta Sutra as Janmadasa Yataha, that from which everything comes. So, in principle, there can be many gods, but in principle, only one absolute truth. That one thing from which everything comes, in which everything emanates. So, the Bhagavad Gita teaches us this absolute truth has energies. And the common example is right now, you see, we can see the energy of the sun. The sunlight is here in the room. So the sun, its energies are light and heat. Now, we say sometimes, at least in English, we say the sun is in the room. But I don't mean that is sitting here burning on the floor, only that the sun's energies are there. So there's the sun and there's the sun's energies. Now there's a fact of the relationship. On the one hand, we have to distinguish it. This is the sunlight, but it's not the sun. We have to make a difference between the sun and the sun's energy. On the other hand, can anyone say where the sun ends and the sunlight begins? There's another way of looking at it where the sun and the sun's energies are one thing. This will be mentioned later on in these verses, that Krishna includes everything, but at the same time he's not everything, more than everything. So in one sense, the energies are Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna. Yet nothing is Krishna except his own original spiritual form. We'll get to this some more. So now, because I'm saying this, because Bina Prakriti Astada, he uses this word Prakriti. Prakriti means energy. So he has this energy of him which is separated, Bina. It's separated from him. To some extent it's separated, not entirely, of course, because we'll see it's connected in one way, but different from the other. The other energy which we'll discuss. So this energy, this is the material energy, because he says bhumi, which means earth, apaha, water, anala, fire, vayu, air, and kam, ether, or space. And then he goes on, we recognize this, you know, earth, water, fire, air. All the time in Middle Ages, these four elements were there. Roman times in the Middle Ages, right? This sounds really old-fashioned, really. But of course, this has this word kam, meaning ether. And then also three more, which we don't hear about, at least in the history of Western thinking, mana, buddhi, ahankara. Means translated here as mind, buddhi, intelligence, and ahankara, a false ego. Now, as I said, this is old. Let's take the ones we are familiar with: earth, water, fire, air, and so let's say ether also. These are called the gross elements. They're more apparent to our senses. But the list starts from the grossest, earth, and then water, which is a liquid, you know, is less gross. Fire is more subtle. Air is even more subtle, and then ether is even subtler. So it goes from the grossest, most apparent to our senses, to the least apparent. And then even subtler, manas, buddhi, ahankara. What we would call mind just mind or psychic. But this is actually part of material nature. So your first thing is earth, water, fire, air, ether. You can make it sound more up-to-date by just translating another way. Instead of earth, we say solids. Solids, things I see here. Let me just look at it. Solids, liquids, gases. Fire, we say radiant energy. And then ether is space. Solids, liquids, gases, radiant energy, and space. This is how they're classified like this. And then it goes on, again talking about material nature, manas, buddhi, ahankara. The mind is a subtle material element according to this. And even more subtler is that part of the subtle body that is called buddhi, intelligence. What intelligence is a little hard to describe in this short time, but it's another kind of a thing that actually functions all the time. We're just usually not aware of it. And then this ahankara. The ahankara is, it literally means aham is I, and kara means maker. What gives me my sense of myself. And here in the material world is what makes us identify ourselves with the body and the mind. We're thinking, I am this body, I am this mind, this is me. So this is called false ego. This is my sense of myself. These are all considered, these manas are considered subtle material energy. See, we living beings have two bodies. We are the spirit soul. That'll be discussed in the next verse, but here we have the spirit soul is in a, living beings are in material bodies. And the material body is both gross, the ones that we can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell, the gross body. In Sanskrit, stula sharira, gross body, and then shukshma sharira, the subtle body. The manas, buddhi, ahankara, that make the subtle body. So we actually have two bodies. Well, we're enclosed in two layers. The layer of the subtle body and the layer of the gross body. Sometimes they're called linga, a sheath, you know, like a glove or a linga. So these are Krishna's energies. And Prabhupada explains in the purport how from these you derive the traditional 24 elements of Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya has 24 elements. But this is basically the separated material energies. Now, we may think that this is very old-fashioned and primitive. Because when we go to school, they put on the wall a big chart. And the first is hydrogen. And it has one proton and one electron going around. And then the atoms go up, the different elements. I think there's 100, I don't know how many now, they keep adding to them. 120 or something. The radioactive elements are there, and, right? And we have this very sophisticated way of, with this atomic theory that says there's things like protons, electrons, neutrons, and so on. And with this atomic theory, you know, we are able to do so many things. We have the whole science of chemistry, and you can put things together and make things happen, and wonderful things, and make atomic bombs, and all the benefits of civilization come from this. Okay. So you may think that Krishna is very backwards, he's not well educated, when he uses this. But let's look at it this way. This classification, this system of dividing up the world into different categories or different names, there are many systems of classification, and they're all good for something. So this will not make us help us make modern plastics or atomic bombs. So far as I know. But we have another way of looking at the world. It gives us a map. It's like a map of the world that helps us to get out. Our purpose is to achieve liberation. And so this is the map that helps us do this. By map, I mean, here's a certain land. And we get a map. It shows us a kind of representation of this land. Now, if you have an automobile, you want a road map. that tells you how you get there by car. But maybe you like to go hiking, walking in the woods. Then a road map is no good. Then you want another kind of map. Or maybe you want to find oil or minerals. Then you need another kind of map. So we have different maps to guide us to reality. So this is Krishna's map that he's giving us for the real purpose of our life, which is to find a way out of the material world. So he's expressed it this way, but already, even though it's in some ways a simple map, you notice that it goes farther than modern science. Because modern science, all that it knows is earth, water, fire, air, and ether, space. It doesn't go anymore. Space is not nothing. At least it's been discovered in the modern world that I have a friend who's a Sariputta, a devotee who's a mathematician, and he says in quantum mechanics it takes pages and pages of equations of mathematics simply to describe empty space. So it's not nothing. It's something. But it's subtle, huh? Beyond that, manas, buddhi, ahankara, the modern scientists don't know anything about it. And have no way, because you see, modern science deals with the world in so far as it can be expressed in terms of numbers. It's a measuring science. Let me see how wide it is, how high it is, how fast it is, how slow it is, how heavy it is, how light it is. We're interested in the world so long as we can turn it into mathematics. That's all it can do. Yeah. So there's a limit like that. Of course, they don't like to accept this limit. And they also make a claim, many of them, that if you can't turn it into mathematics, it doesn't exist. But I don't know how they know that. That's just a statement of faith. So the modern science has some tools to deal with the world. But you should not say, if our tools won't deal with it, it doesn't exist. That's just pride. They want to be omnipotent. Run everything. So right now, at least, they cannot measure manas, buddhi, ahankara. They cannot measure it. But we know that actually, our mind, for example, our subtle body and our gross body, they're part of the same causal system. They're related to each other. For example, if I become angry, I know what anger feels like. It's in the subtle body. But that makes my face become red and my hands to shake, right? So here's something that's subtle. It causes some change in the gross body. They're related, part of the same network of cause and effect. Similarly, I take a form of liquid, water, liquid, but let's say it's alcohol, and I drink it, then my subtle body also becomes affected. Right? So this gross and the subtle body, they're all part of the same causal system. So our body is really a psychophysical unit. Both go together. For some time in European philosophy, they thought the soul, the spirit soul, was the subtle body. And then everybody got very confused, because obviously the fact is the subtle body is a material thing. And now, like, it's the big breakthrough of holistic thinking to understand that these two are related to each other. But still, they can't measure it. Now people are trying to study the mind by studying the brain. The brain scientists are working all the time. They can take pictures of what's going on in your brain now. And they just want to pretend the mind doesn't exist. They just want to say, you know, there's no mind, it's just a brain. Because they can measure it. But they'll find out, if they keep on measuring, they'll find out things are happening in the brain that they simply can't explain. In the brain, they'll discover events take place with no cause. That because the cause is the subtle body. And they won't be able to find it. Anyway, so this is the first, his material energies. Krishna's Bina Prakriti Astada, these eightfold material energies. And then he says, now we go way beyond modern knowledge. Then, beside this energy, he calls it apura, meaning inferior energy. Now I'm on text 5. Besides this inferior energy, he calls it inferior, there is another prakriti. There's this one prakriti that's inferior, and the other prakriti is param, superior, higher. What is that prakriti? Jiva Buddha, all the living beings. Here he means not the body, not the mind, but the souls, the living entities, the spirit souls. Yeyedam dharyate jagat, who are trying to use or exploit or do things with this jagat, this universe. So here is the soul, the jiva bhuta, the jivatma. This is also a controversial thing in modern philosophy. Nobody knows, has any idea what a soul is. Or how it is different from the mind. But briefly, we learn a little later on in the Bhagavad Gita that not only do we know the soul by our experience, that the soul is the condition for our having any experiences whatsoever. Because the symptom of the presence of soul is consciousness. And again, if you look at the brain, you won't see consciousness, but somebody is looking and somebody is seeing. So consciousness means, in this case, simply the ability to have experiences, to undergo experiences. In that sense, we understand. And in other words, this body, Krishna described as a machine, a yantra. This is this gross and subtle machine made by material nature. So it's a machine. So for example, my ears, sound is going into my ears. My ears are a little machine, and then something goes to the brain. But then somewhere I experience the sound. Now see, here's another machine. Sound goes in here, but nobody experiences it in this machine. Because there's nobody at home. There's nobody there. So not only, my body is an object in the world, but I'm not just an object, I'm a subject. That is to say, I undergo experiences. Even the cat I saw coming through the garden, that cat is also just not a machine. That cat undergoes experiences. The kind of experiences a cat has with a cat body and a cat mind. But that cat has significance for himself. He's different from the bench, which is just an object. So this is what it means, that I undergo experiences. I have, another way to put it, I have significance for myself. Whereas these material things have just had significance for me. So this spiritual energy, the conscious living entities, is separate. It doesn't come out of the gross, the bin of prakriti astada. See, the material science right now wants to reduce everything to matter. Like, they don't know about the spirit soul. They don't know that it's a separate energy of Krishna. It's a separate energy. So in this world, there are these two things. There's matter and there's spirit. Spirit does not evolve out of matter. But the program is to get rid of consciousness, really. To explain it away. Because this has a problem. Let us say, according to the evolutionary way of thinking, from the very beginning we have some very simple material structures. We have structures of matter. And in the beginning, they're very simple. Structure of matter means you can define it or express it completely in terms of numbers. This is the structure of matter. And then, over the course of time, these structures of matter, for some reason, become more complicated. First of all, there's some kind of soup, and in this soup there are just subatomic particles, and then somehow they self-organize, or by chance they become atoms. And these atoms become get in more complicated arrangements, and they become molecules. And then because molecules get complicated, especially with carbon atoms, and then you get more complicated things, and then you get life. Then you get life. Living beings. And they also get more and more complicated and so on. This is the story they tell. So there's structures of matter. These structures of matter get more and more complicated. And then what they're saying, something else happens, comes into existence, which is not another structure of matter, but is the experience of structures of matter. There's a different kind of category of things. Really, if that's all that there is structures of matter, that's all you should get. But what is this thing, experience of structures of matter? Where does it come from? That's a big problem for them. For materialistic scientists like this who want to say everything is just matter. But here, what Krishna says, no, they come from two, they're two different energies. There's the material energy and then the spiritual energy. And then he says, in text 6, now he says that all created beings have their source in these two energies, these two natures. Right? In other words, this world arises when these two energies flow together. There's a confluence, they flow together, they come together, the living entities and material nature, and then the world arises from these two energies. Now, where you want to say, where do these energies come from? Krishna says, Aham Krishnasya Jagata Prabhava Pralayas Tata. I am the source of both of these, the Prabhava, the source of the manifestation. These energies, they come out of me, I put them together, and then he also says Pralaya, and I bring them back inside. They go out from me, and then they come in from me. So now we have three things. We have matter, we have spirit, and we have the source of both of them, Krishna. Krishna says, Aham, I. And both of these come from me. And then he says, Mata parataram nanyat kinchit asti, Dhananjaya. And beyond me, there's nothing more. So that's it, right? He said he'd tell us everything that there is, so there it is. There's matter, and there's spirit, and there's Krishna, who's the source of both of them. You see, he's done it. Now you know what there is. This is Bhagavad Gita, is a short work, so it's a summary. There's a lot to be known more about matter, and a lot to be more known about spirit, and a lot more to be known about Krishna. But basically, this is what there is. Because mata parataram najyat kishchanasti, beyond me, there's nothing more. And then he says, very beautifully, mayi sarvam idam protam sutre manigana iva. So everything that there is, mayi sarvam idam, everything here in this world is resting on me, the way that a string of pearls, manigana, a string of pearls is resting on a thread. Sutre manigana iva, like pearls are strung upon a string or a thread. So that means that that means that Krishna is there in everywhere or inside of everything. Because these are his energies, and in one sense they're Krishna in another form. So we mentioned before the difference between the sun and the sunshine. In one sense they're one, in another sense they're different. So Krishna and Krishna's energies are like that. This is called achincha beda abeda tattva, the principle of inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. Beda means different, abeda means not different. At the end of the last purport in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada puts it like this: nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. You just say it to yourself all the time, like these Zen Buddhists, sometimes they meditate on it. So, nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. So Prabhupada once said to us, don't see a tree, see Krishna. So this doesn't mean that the tree is God. But nevertheless, we should see that tree as Krishna's energy in relationship to Krishna. We should see that this tree belongs to Krishna. It's another spirit soul. He has his own life to live, his own karma or whatever. You know, he's a living entity in that kind of a body. We have to show some respect that it's Krishna's tree. I can't just cut it down. Sometimes when devotees would cut down trees, Prabhupada would become so upset. Once in the Dallas temple, in the courtyard, there was a big tree, and it was leaning on the roof of the building. Dallas, Texas. The temple had some buildings around the central courtyard, and there was a big tree. And so the tree people came and said, yeah, you have to cut it down, damage your roof. So the devotees cut it down, and Prabhupada was so angry. He said, that tree was here long before you were. You had no right. It's like senior to you. How did you have to take a right to? And the devotee should have found some other way to solve the problem than to protect the roof and to cut down the tree. It was a similar thing in Bombay, where the city said the road had to be a certain, we had to have a road in our property a certain width, and these palm trees had to go. And Prabhupada had us fight with him until we found a way to keep those trees. Some of them we cut down, and then Prabhupada found out what was happening, and then we kept them. Yeah. Because he didn't see a tree, he saw this is Krishna's tree. It belongs to Krishna. So we have to see that way, and therefore, now Krishna says, he gives some examples of how to see. Rasoham apsukonteya. I am taste or flavor in water. The element water carries taste or flavors. You have to dissolve something in water for to be able to taste it. The tongue needs water, it's wet. So whatever taste is there in water, that taste is Krishna. Even just the ability of water to stop our thirst, that is Krishna. So a devotee thinks, when he drinks, he says, oh, Krishna's so wonderful. He's here in this water so that I can quench my thirst. Huh? So anytime we should not just think of water like an ordinary thing. This is Krishna's energy. And then he says, Prabhasi Sashi Surayaha. I am the light of the sun and the moon. So in the daytime we have sunlight, at nighttime there's moonshine, moonlight. Again we say, look what Krishna has given us. This sun, it gives us all energy and heat and everything, and then at night, nice cooling moonlight. So again we should see, here's Krishna in this form. Someone asked Prabhupada, have you seen Krishna? And he said to this person, yes, and so have you. Have you seen the sun? Have you seen the moon? So they've seen Krishna, but they didn't recognize him. Again, you have to see them. These are Krishna's energies. Krishna's doing so many things. Then he says, I am the syllable, the pranava, in all the Vedas. This pranava means omkara, the syllable om. The Vedas are made of sound, and the seed sound from which all the Vedic mantras come is this omkara. It's a, u, m. When you say a, it's in your throat. When you say u, it's in your mouth. And when you say m, it's here at the front. So you go all the way, all the ways you can make sound. So the Vedic mantras, they all come from Om. Omkara. So here we see that Krishna is like the essential or the best part of everything. Shabda ke, in space, I am Shabda, sound. It's said that when the world is created, actually the syllable Om, is vibrated, and that vibration creates space, and then from space comes air, and from air comes fire, from fire comes water, from water from earth. It goes from subtle to gross. Shabdake, I am sound and ether. And Purusham Rishu, and in humanity, It says ability in man. Man, the word for man is purusha. So paurusha, whatever makes a human being great or talented, what skillful, that's paurusha. I am ability in man. And so like this, here's a way to think about Krishna. In the beginning, we cannot see Krishna, maybe we can only see matter. But we should train ourselves that we see things, everything is coming from Krishna. Punya Ganda Prithivim Cha. I am the pure odor or scent of the earth. Prabhupada said the original fragrance of the earth. Odors come from the earth. And I am heat in fire. I am the life of all that lives. All living things, they have this life. This life comes from Krishna, actually. He's the animating force. And tapas chasmi tapasvi, and in those who practice austerity, I am that austerity, tejas. Tapaha. But that also means a certain kind of power that comes, that power. And we don't know this in the West, but when people practice tapa, austerity, they get power. So that power is Krishna. He goes on. So you can read this and how you can see Krishna everywhere, because he's explained now what there is. That there's matter, and that comes from him. So that's one of Krishna's energy. There's the living beings that comes from him. All that there is Krishna. You say what there is in the world, Krishna and Krishna's energies. That's it. You've named everything. And you could even say there's only Krishna, because he exists in both forms, as Krishna and as his energies. So this is quite an education here in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna said in the beginning, I'm going to tell you everything that there is. And so if we follow this process of Krishna consciousness, and practice this meditating on Krishna in so many different ways, we'll actually come to see this for ourselves. See, we have to use the Shastra Chakshusha. We have to see through Shastra. We never see the world except through something. That is to say, we are given a way to look at the world. Wherever we're born, we take it in with our mother's milk. Different cultures have different ways of looking at the world. If you get trained as medical science, you'll again look at people a different way. If you get trained as a psychologist, again you look in a different way. If you get trained as some kind of engineer, again you'll see in a different way. All these different ways of knowledge is different ways of looking at the world. So for those who want to see God, this is the way. For those who want to become free from birth and death in this world, this is the way. So this is the education, so that we know how to see the world and how to work in it, so that we will actually come to know Krishna completely and asamshaya, without any doubt. That you can no more doubt Krishna's existence. When we become Krishna conscious, we can no more doubt Krishna's existence than we can doubt our own. That's just what consciousness. When consciousness becomes more intense and expands, it becomes Krishna consciousness. So I can't doubt my own existence because of I'm conscious. If I doubt my own existence, who's doubting? is not possible. So when I understand my own existence more fully, my consciousness expands, then I also can understand here is Krishna. Okay, are there any questions?
I have a question for Buddy. Just simple, when my daughter comes home from school and now we will say that this one is better because he writes better marks, or he can speak in TV, someone can speak very sophisticated. So how to explain someone, the writer, because then it's not intelligence, means to know Krishna is good.
Yeah, well, no, buddhi is a little more, what we call intelligence means to have a skillful mind. That's skilled manas. But intelligence, buddhi is sometimes described as discrimination. Let me see how to explain this. You see, the mind is trained in a certain way. And in the beginning, the mind is simply accepts and rejects things in terms of sense gratification. If it feels good, I take it in. If it feels bad, I push it off. Right. But buddhi has the ability to override the mind. Because if we just have no, if we have no buddhi whatsoever, we can't get through the day. So actually, a child's intelligence is formed from the parents in the beginning. In this way, like if I'm given, let's say I'm sick and I go to a doctor. And the doctor, who's an authority, he tells me, you have to take this medicine, some water, some liquid in a bottle. You have to take this medicine every day. But when I take it, it tastes horrible. And my first reaction is to spit it out. This is the mind, right? And if just the mind is there, like a little child, they'll spit it out. But because I have the authority of the doctor, I am able to not spit it out and swallow it anyway. So that ability, this is intelligence in one sense, to override the mind. So in, children they learn this, because if you just do things on the basis of immediate sense gratification, you won't get up, you won't go to school, you won't brush your teeth, you won't do anything, you know. So this is one example, because everyone needs some intelligence. But then the other use of intelligence is ultimately how we see the whole world. In psychology, sometimes they use this idea of a mindset. We have a whole system of categories and of seeing the world. We don't even nobody even teaches us this. We just kind of take it in as part of the culture. We have a whole way of looking at the world, a mindset, a gestalt. You know, this whole if we just see something and we see this gestalt is there, right? And the ability, what makes this gestalt is intelligence. And what changes it, sometimes it changes. Sometimes the whole thing falls apart and you have to start all over again with a whole new mindset, a whole new gestalt. That's when intelligence is at work. Those of us who are devotees, we went through such a change. We had a way of looking at the world on the basis of sense gratification and material ideas of what's good and what's interesting and what's not interesting and what's worthwhile. And then when we became devotees, we changed completely. It's like we're in a different world. And actually the Bhagavad Gita says this, What is night for everybody else is daytime for the sage who sees. And what's night for him is day for everybody else. So people can simply be in the same environment but see completely different things because of the way they look at the world. So that whole way of looking at the world, what really determines that is buddhi, is intelligence. And what the Bhagavad Gita is about, essentially, is the education or the formation, building of intelligence. Because Prabhupada said that, once he said that there are different levels of culture. There's the culture of the body, the culture of the mind, the culture of intelligence, and the culture of the soul proper. So the culture of the body we see being carried out in different places in society. There's restaurants for eating nicely and those places for sense gratification, and also places that people go for exercising, health spas and wellness clinics, and you know, all this is all for the body, the culture of the body. Then the place where the mind is cultivated, these are our universities and places like this, where people basically what they do is they get some ideas and they look at them and play with them and do things with them until they get tired of them, and then they get another idea. They simply, it's all mental. It's all on the basis of accepting and rejecting. And it's a kind of a high-level entertainment. Because intellectual fashions, these kind of mental fashions, they change just like fashions in clothes. Everybody gets tired of doing one thing and then they do something else. The latest thing is this in string theory and physics. Now, we don't do that anymore. Now we're doing this. You know? They just theoretically accepted it. So that's the best you see in the universities among these thinkers and intellectuals is really the mind. Then Prabhupada said the culture of intelligence is Bhagavad Gita. You remember so many times devotional service or what Krishna is teaching is called Buddhi Yoga. It's the yoga, the spiritual discipline for training Buddhi. And then we discover, if we get into Bhagavad Gita, that ultimately when Buddhi is really trained and developed fully, we surrender to Krishna. Because this Buddhi, who is giving us this direction and guiding us and directing us, is actually Krishna. In the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that Krishna, intelligence or Buddhi, is the form in which Krishna gives us direction. Krishna is directing everybody, but if we purify our consciousness, we can begin to perceive that this is Krishna directing. But in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So when we want to forget Krishna, it's our decision. When we want to forget Krishna, it is Krishna who gives us the buddhi to forget him. So Prabhupada said, there are many arguments, there is no God, God is dead, everything happens by chance. He said, where do these arguments come from? They come from Krishna. That those people who want to forget Krishna, he gives them the intelligence to forget. And when somebody wants to remember Krishna, then he gives the buddhi to remember. So when buddhi is fully developed and formed and purified, then we surrender to Krishna. Having surrendered to Krishna, then we go to the culture of the soul, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam begins where the Bhagavad Gita ends. So that's really it's what we mean by buddhi. Hardly anybody in the West there. Once in a while you find a philosopher that will begin to get some little understanding of buddhi, like Immanuel Kant, but very few people get there, and they can't stay there for very long. Okay? So otherwise intelligence, you know, you get good test scores and everything else, and a good memory and all these things. That's really the mind for the most part. And there's always some intelligence there, because you couldn't even walk through the room without some buddhi. But this is what we mean. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.